Welcome and thanks for listening. My name is Christian Buckley and you're listening to the Collab Talk podcast. In this episode, I'm talking with Yasir Drabu, founder and CEO of Taza, on the short and long-term opportunities for AI within the enterprise. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Collab Talk podcast, where we discuss the convergence of technology, business productivity, and collaboration culture. My guest today is Yasir Drabu, founder and CEO of Taza, a product engineering and software development company. Welcome, Yasir.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm excited to jump into this topic. As I was telling you before we started recording, that you know, had a kind of a parallel conversation, another episode talking about opportunities for AI around SMBs, smaller, like the long tail of companies. We're talking today about opportunities for AI in the enterprise. So I'm interested in getting your perspective and having a conversation. But Yasir, I always like to start this way, like kind of who are you, your background, tell us a little bit about what your company does and where your focus is.
Yeah, being a computer geek from the time I remember, loved building software and then eventually got into product engineering, was on my way to becoming a professor, did my PhD in computer science, but really enjoyed building products. So shifted gears a little bit and started Taza to really enable doing that. We started with a team of 3-4 in the proverbial garage, so to speak. We didn't really have a garage, but then ended up growing it to almost a 350-person engineering company where we are building some interesting products. And it's fun to come to work on a Monday morning or a Friday. It's fun every day.
Do you focus on any specific industries, or are you broad kind of where the opportunities are?
Yeah, we're broad. Obviously, serendipity, you land in some industries. So EdTech, logistics, healthcare, and fintech seem to have been some of the areas we've gravitated towards. But we've done projects in other areas as well. But these are we have a little bit larger footprint and domain expertise in these.
Interesting about AI is that, I mean, everybody's asking about it. But what my impression is that most organizations are still very much in the piloting stage. They don't yet fully understand, what they should be doing, where they need to go. And so they're trying things here and there, having conversations about it. I mean, so I'm interested to know, so what are people coming to your team for help on building? What types of things around AI?
Right. So I think right now, I think in the early stages, they're trying to understand how this would impact them, and we've had some various POCs. I think the most common use case is improving customer service, for example, right? Mm-hmm. There's a knowledge base, and traditional search is great, but being able to summarize that and succinctly and be able to answer a question that's more specific has been a very common use case, and we've actually helped build a couple of use cases where you have a product and then you build a chatbot around it, enhance it with, so you would take a foundational model like ChatGPT or others or Gemini and then augment it with their proprietary, application data and then make it easy for their customers to ask, how do I do this? Instead of just pointing you to an article that was manually written, now it can summarize. Step one, click here. It actually generates some of those responses, which are very, very guided and tailored to the question that's asked.
And those kinds of solutions have been around for a long time. I remember I was working with a consulting firm company back in 2005, and they were starting to experiment with expanding their support, their knowledge base. And so I don't think that at that time it was even referred to as like building a chat bot, but it was an automated support tool, they were building.
Yeah. So what this does is it expands that quite a bit, right? So I think that's a baseline. I would say that's like the first simple use case. It's logical. You build where you kind of fully understand. But if you take it a step further, you almost get to the next level, which we are integrating with their APIs through the chatbot, right? So now they can say, you know, earlier it would be 6 menu clicks to do something. And now they can say, hey, send Christian an invoice for $200, right? It's a very basic use case. And it would actually do everything and create that and say, send it. So we are working on that kind of natural language, you know, natural language interface, which is more easier than having a whole menu-driven system or going through 6 clicks. Or imagine, and this is probably going to be very common, where you could have your assistant like Siri and others connect more integrated into your application, where you can say, hey, Siri, and this is on an enterprise app, right? Oops, my Siri turned on. but then go from there. So I think we are building on that we're building up from that basic enhanced version. Obviously, LLMs have a much better ability to summarize and understand intent, and with fine tuning and embeddings, as they're called, you can actually enhance the outcomes on that, then actually make it more specific to that their particular account. So that's one use case. We have about 6-7 other use cases that the enterprise is trying with workflow automation, agent-based approaches, which I'd happy to discuss depending on where the conversation leads.
But, you know, I was thinking, again, to talk about the potential applications for this. I mean, 25 years ago, working for a company where we were building a demand planning for a manufacturing sector.
Yes.
And so a lot of what we were building, I mean, I can see how this can be automated across the board. So again, how for folks that aren't familiar with that space, it's essentially, you have a manufacturer of a product and all of their partners that are in the ecosystem, their tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 suppliers that are part of that, the shipping, the operations side of the business, all of that. Like if they make a change to the product, and which might change where the, which materials are used, which external components are used, the mm-hmm. time it takes to build the product. And then, so you can, the idea is that you can estimate, if we make this change, this is the impact to trucks on the road delivering products to stores, that it would take by making that design change. And so you can make decisions based on, hey, we know this manufacturer went out of business, we've got a new one, how long it'll take until we're able to ship again, those mm-hmm. kinds of impacts, which is what's cool stuff 25 years ago, just a lot of effort to get that information.
Sure.
And now we can do that much more quickly. Yeah.
I think the models are flipping, right? So traditionally you have declarative programming, right? So you would write a program, the programmers would hand code every use case and, write algorithms to solve for it. I think flipping that model around, whether it is, the use case I mentioned was more on the generative AI LLM, but there are task specific models that can be created, and then you can use them to kind of get you the answers that you're looking for, right? So you train the models on enough data, then they can provide you some predictive answers with higher probabilities. And I think that's the paradigm shift from a programming standpoint. Earlier, you would write declarative programs, save it to the database, pull data, then write some logic, and then apply different operational research constraints on it. And then you say, okay, this is what the demand structure should be in this case. I'm just saying, now the programming paradigm is shifting. Hey, we're going to give you a lot of data. Here's a different programming paradigm where you're building the model and then asking it. So I think that creates a whole new set of applications and areas that you can address. So I work with a client of mine. They do video analytics, right? So they mm-hmm. do video analysis, quality analysis. 10 years ago, doing analysis on video is very painstaking. You have to kind of extract the iframes, V-frames, then try to do image object recognition and all that. It was just hard work, and it didn't work very well, to be very honest. So they gave up on some aspects. They would, the areas that they could quantify and parameterize, they did. Others, they just couldn't. Now you can, with some of these task-specific models on Hugging Faces and others, you can you can apply like a large context window and analyze 10 minutes of video. And it'll, then you can say, is there a white horse running in this somewhere in the scene? It'll actually pull up that right frame and be able to do that. So you can do deeper analytics. Now they're using that for, you know, for content safety and other things, especially with content rating. Hey, somebody doesn't want, you know, their kids to watch something that's inappropriate. This can actually do some content analysis and better rating on specific sections of them and get more granular. Those things are possible right now. We're talking about how to solve for that, which is the model we're going to use, how we're going to deploy it, what's the financial model on this. This would have not been a use case that would have been solved 10 years ago. So
right.
The AI just enabled them to do this, and hopefully it turns their company around and expands their ability to do analysis that's more meaningful and not just on key technical parameters, but actually on the content that was hard to articulate just 10 years ago.
Well, this is, I know this is a parallel to this and is a slightly different discussion, but I know that, I mean, with, when you think of like the duopoly around marketing, which is really Google and Facebook, to some degree, Apple in there with what they pieces that they own, but where, you know, you've got those marketers that are, Google and Facebook primarily, that are concerned about the move towards so much video and these tools, because it just completely changes the way that people have the ability to go and purchase based on what they're seeing. I mean, we're very close to the point in time where with the use of AI and understand, even in live TV, you see somebody, a character that you like wearing a jacket, you really is like, hey, that's a nice jacket. And to be able to point and click at something and it identifies what it is, it finds it, and puts it in your Amazon cart, you know?
Yep. And I think these would not be possible just five years ago,
right.
forget 10. So that's why it creates very interesting use cases. It creates a whole new set of applications, and it does require some retooling and rethinking on the engineer's point of view, from going from a deterministic to a probabilistic programming model, which and looking at other ways to program. But it creates all these new use cases that were earlier considered very hard to solve, and you needed a PhD and really, you know, and even they would struggle with it because there was no easy way to solve it till we got to this larger models that can do better, you know, a better identification of whether it's an image or a video within an image sort of thing. So,
well, I'm interested to get your perspective. I know a lot of this is like a real thing too, where you know, a CEO is on a flight, reads the in-flight magazine around something on AI, or lands at his, you know, team meeting and says to his leadership team, "We need to get some more of this AI stuff because of the article they read in Delta in-flight magazine." You know, that actually happens all the time.
Yes, sir.
But I'm interested, besides just, you know, companies not wanting to get left behind, how do you advise them on what should companies be thinking about and doing? Are there kind of fundamental pieces around AI that they should be looking at and considering building, customizing for their businesses?
Yeah, I think AI will, at least from a business standpoint, I'm not going to speak to the broader ecosystem. That's a broader conversation. But specifically within the business world, I think people should really adopt it for their needs. Whether it's it is from a point of view of how can it enable everyday jobs to be made easier. So if they just do a step back, analyze what you're doing in your business, and see which parts are really you know, mind-numbing, and you know, things that can be automated, and where humans can excel still. I mean, I think there's still collaboration, very appropriately, the whole collaboration, ideation, and being able to create and envision products or outcomes is still within human domain. I think while artificial intelligence can seem intelligent, it's still based on the intelligence that humans have created, and it's just regurgitating that in a better format. At least that's the case so far, whether it's music creation tools or otherwise. So I would say stop and take stock. So you wanted to say something?
Yeah, like I was going to say, so I started my career 30 years ago as a business analyst, and one of the things, you know, as an analyst, you go in, you want to understand what is the business need, what's the technology capability, and here's how the two can come together. One of the lessons I learned very early on was that you ask somebody like their requirements, the outcome they want from something, they will give you their, like what they think they need based on their lens of understanding today. You show them a bunch of new technology. The danger there, if you show them all this new stuff, then they start thinking more of what's, you know, not so much in the frame of what I actually need. They start seeing all the potential, the things that it's actually a happy medium somewhere in between there, where they kind of synthesize. I'm using the management words here, but they but they truly understand of, okay, here's what I actually need, here's what the technology can do, and then let's start exploring that. And the really the only way that you can have that understanding, and in this case, and I'll make this case for AI, is to pilot, to experiment. I don't know what questions to ask yet about AI. I'm playing with it in different things, but my point here is that it, I think it's a mistake to only move forward when you have a clear-cut answer to this is the ROI of this solution. Like, you will be far behind your competitors if you fail to go out there and experiment and understand to know which questions to ask to better understand how you're going to customize, build unique solutions, get competitive advantage around AI for your business.
Yeah, you need to develop deep understanding. So I think given the speed of innovation, it's an exponentially moving fast field. You're either too early because it's not good enough, or simply you become too late because the curve is very exponential. You know, if you're like 8 months later and you're still starting to think about it, then you're already, you know, the curve might have gone so fast that you could miss that window. So I, in most of the, I publish one or two blog posts, and everybody, I tell, start small, start with a team, start experimenting, engage with us or internally, it doesn't matter, right? So, but need to start somewhere, whether it is simply starting to use ChatGPT to get some summarization on things, that can be the easiest point of entry, but then thinking how you can apply it to business, or, you know, we are advising some cities on how to take AI into city government and make it bring more innovation and services to its citizens and make their lives easier, make the connection between city officials, elected officials, and the residents more tight-knit as a community. There are a lot of things that can be done very easily because of the advent of AI. But again, you can develop the roadmap, but start with small experiments and ideas that you implement, and each one will create an inflection point that will naturally catapult. And then you look back 24 months back, oh, but that was so obvious, right? But the hindsight is always 2020. So start small. I always say, like, even with some of the product companies that we're advising, I said, what's a simple use case? One of them, they have a onboarding challenge where the user needs to write a bio or some of the things that they can do. Usually people get stuck building their menu of services in that product, right? And then somebody has to call them and coach them. I said, why ask them for 2-3 keywords, what they're good at, help, we can do a fine tuning model, and let's just simply do an autocomplete and give them 3 or 4 summaries to pick from so they can move faster, right? It's a very simple use case for generative AI with the right tooling and some prompt engineering and a little bit of embedded enhanced domain specific information that could make their so start there. Once you start using it, then you we could do this in this other area. Maybe it's the way we when somebody is in the cart, shopping cart, maybe we can do this or that. You collect all these data points and then you build on that. So if you have a grand vision that, let's flip everything over. It is a high risk, high reward. It may work for some companies, but in generally, you would start with the simple use case, gain efficiencies and insight and learning and the domain understanding of what this could do. Very much aligned with what you just said. And then grow from there. I think that's the right way to do it at this point because we really don't know their capabilities. I mean, they're cool. There's a lot of hallucination. There's a lot of verbose recitation.
But, yes, there are. Yep.
While they say, you know, it does write code, but it doesn't know the meaning of the code. So it can write good snippets. And I'm sure at some point it'll get better with more context and more tuning and larger context windows and things like that that people are working on. But it does, you know, I would say start small. We've started adopting it in various areas of the business to help us make things better. In some ways, it'll help us gain efficiencies. In some ways, it'll make our programmers better. In some ways, it'll make our business analysts who work with product owners to analyze a requirement, their thought process or the way they document and the way they synthesize information and organize better. We are already seeing some of those things. People are getting better with their outputs. I see emails that are more refined and the questions are better defined. A lot of those things are happening. So it's already... We keep promoting that in our business, and we also encourage others to do it. But then the next step is how do you take that foundation and then build on it incrementally till you get to the point of that ROI considerations and all those. I think right now would be the time to experiment and adopt.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's almost like what you say is that it's certainly true with large enterprises. You almost need to have an AI R&D team. Like build that out there, and just that needs to be part of whether you maybe you already have an R&D team if you're a software development company, but even large enterprises. I was thinking like having worked for the phone company, having worked for these massive organizations. There's a lot of organizations. I work around collaboration technology, so a lot of the people that I know that I've connected to are part of large organizations in the modern workplace team. So their job is how do we make sure people have the right tools and are the most productive? So collaboration, communication, productivity. You think of Word, PowerPoint, those kinds of things, but Teams versus Slack versus whatever the tools are, we want people to work more closely together. That might be the team that also takes on the ownership of that R&D function, the experimentation with AI.
Yeah. So I think larger enterprises who can afford to have their own R&D teams, great. Where they don't have that expertise or need the help of companies like ours, and I'm not just saying me, but there are so many others that can help. But either way, I think making some small bets to make sure that you are, you are thinking about the future of work, right? So you really want to see how you work. Even if we look back 10, 15 years, the way we used to work 15 years ago versus what we work now is significantly different. And with AI, it's only going to get further. It's going to be a lot of things are going to change, and there's going to be a different world in 5 years. And the new generation that's coming into work would maybe consider some of the tools we use today archaic, because they, why do we have to struggle with Zoom to figure out how to connect when my personal AI agent can take care of scheduling, and when the meeting comes on, there's a lot of things that make them more productive, so they focus only on the parts that matter the most.
I'm waiting so much for that, because you have these single solutions that do cool things, but I want them to connect and talk to each other. I mean, something as simple as, even how ChatGPT used to be, you go in, you'd have it define an image, but then you'd have to open up DALL-E to create the image. Now you have the ability for it to call upon other AI APIs and leverage that and do more complex tasks.
Yeah.
So it's that service bus model where the natural language AI can go and draw from those various tools that you have added and configured in there. Because I want the same thing. Why? I just ran into this issue. Like I use Calendly, and there's reasons for that. There's Microsoft has bookings and other things that are strengths and weaknesses of each. And Calendly is the tool that I've selected. It's the most robust there. But I do a couple shows where I am a co-host. There is not a calendaring solution for two people in two different companies that we can both opt in, give it the rights, the permissions to do that, and then schedule it for our two disparate calendars. Why is that missing? Why can't AI do that and then schedule it for both of us?
Right. And it is coming, by the way. Interestingly, we were just talking to a AI startup that exactly does some of that stuff. But it is a harder problem to solve right now, but it does, right? Ultimately, I think every business owner or anybody professional would have their own AI assistant, whether you want to call it productivity assistant or others. I know Copilot is one that comes through Microsoft, but imagine that transcends the boundaries of a particular platform, right? Right. You would eventually get this on a holistic level. And I think while Microsoft and others are suited to do that, and I think there's going to be one from, I think Apple is probably the most well-poised to do that in some ways, just because of the way they're set up. But they have a very closed ecosystem, which they'll have to eventually open up.
Right.
I mean, they have to fight. They'll have to come up, really become that collaborative partner. I think Microsoft made that transition 8 to 10 years back to stop pushing Windows into everybody and try to push their tools.
Right. And a lot of credit to Satya Nadella, CEO, for pushing for that change. Because I remember the speech when he just became CEO and talked about it. He said, we're going to create the best software in the world. And where we're not the best, or we don't have a solution, we need to be the best at partnering with the other solutions. And then he went on and talked about, again, this is paraphrasing here, but that you have to, companies that build solutions and provide services have to think of it in terms of the customer and what they're trying to do end to end. And you may own this piece and this piece, but they have to do all those other things in between. And if you are making it difficult for them to connect, to integrate, for them to get their work done, guess what? They're going to go with another solution provider out there. And so it's to the benefit of all of us to figure out how these things work together. That's why, do you envision around AI that there's going to be like some global standards body, like pulling together like how the things communicate? Because I was on a subcommittee for the Global Grid Forum. I participated in the finance sector, the NACHA, panels and groups around that. And so I've been part of these different, cross competitor industry standards bodies. Do you see something similar happening around AI and getting these things to work together?
I believe so. I think, first of all, I think the biggest one will be around AI ethics and safety would be probably the first one. I think the interoperability is coming through some of these libraries like PyTorch and TensorFlow and others. They're already very much within a standard, and the LLM models that are dropped and things that are doing through Hugging Faces, there seems to be a community-based consensus on how some of these are best stored. Ultimately, there will be protocols between AIs to talk to each other through some sort of machine language exchange, and there will, as you said, NACHA and other formats, there will be some sort of some form of that happening, so AI agents can chat with each other in an efficient manner, whether that's a binary JSON or who knows which format it's going to end up being. But there's going to be some conversation capabilities that are going to be standardized, and they can exchange, just like service discovery and things like that, they could exchange capabilities and things like that to build a broader consensus of, hey, I can take care of scheduling. I can book a ride for Yasser, or I can get his flight information. And then it comes up just like, what they're calling large action model or large semantic models. So there's going to be a combination of intent and other areas. This is on the personal front. And similarly, services provided by businesses will have a similar kind of services, where my hope is that they're providing better quality of service. And we've known that there's only few companies that get 5-star rating, others suck, but can and mainly it's not because they want to be bad, it's just that they are resource constrained.
Right.
So can AI make them resource rich? Can a small business really provide customer service 24/7, which is right now in the purview of a larger enterprise that can afford it because of their price points? if some of these things can be enabled, you start getting better outcomes from different businesses for their customers, higher customer satisfaction. Hopefully there's a, you know, people don't then go to the bigger companies for better service. They just stay with the customer, you know, with,
right.
with smaller, it might create that.
Well, the portions that, because they might have it more deeply integrated, it might be more personalized for their business, for their industry, for their customers. I mean, but it'd be great, again, if the system, to some degree, you know, became, you know, self-aware of these various services, understood those components. And so if in a, you know, public system, it becomes aware that, hey, there's a better component, somebody built a better piece that would be a closer fit for what you're trying to do, and make that integration and swapping out components and services. Of course, and I know that, and you slightly smiled there, smirked there as well. And as I'm, here's my joke part. Aren't we just paving the road to Skynet?
which is obviously on everybody's mind, right? Yeah, right. Are we going into a Wally-like future where we just
scrolling? I want to just be plugged into the matrix. I want to be blissfully unaware. That's fine.
So yeah, but the I think Matrix was the first movie that really touched on the size and scale. That's why I think it became such a cult favorite. And
because it's the truth, we are in the Matrix. That's why it hit home. No, but you're right. No, because it touches on that point. No, and I think you made the point too, that the fact that you think that a lot of this will be driven, by the ethical use of AI conversation. This is the, again, 30 years in tech. This is, and I'm a governance technology guy. For a lot of what I focus on is like, how are we using it? How best do we manage it and have oversight of that? And so security and ethical use of technology is a core part of overall governance, IT governance. And the fact that so quickly at the beginning of this move, of this shift towards AI, every huge company is like, yes, this is important. It's up front for the first time. Usually it's an afterthought that comes after. It's like, we're already cutting down all the trees and we'll figure out what we need to do with the wildlife that used to use the forest. It's at the beginning where we have people that, even Elon Musk, saying, hey, there's some good valid reasons for putting the brakes on a little bit, slowing things down, and better understanding what we're doing before we do it. And so I think that's healthy. I'm on the gung-ho, let's go, let's push, let's go as fast, let's learn as much. But I appreciate that there's that balance, that there are those people that are asking those questions, ethics. It's a much healthier dialogue than I've seen with past, technology booms.
Right. I think there, in terms of creating that pathway for some sort of standards and controls, I really believe that there has to, those conversations need to be healthy. I think it's not going to be humans versus AI for a long time. Ultimately, they need to run on these expensive graphic cards, right, which if we stop producing or we turn off the electricity on them, the AI model is not going to work on by itself. And it's right. not going to, there are some movies that that figure out how to do that. I still think we can unplug machines.
Yeah.
And
Did Sam Altman get his $4 trillion or whatever he wanted to go and build? I don't think so. Not yet, but
yeah. Not yet. I think that he's just talking about the scope of that. I think the some of the CEOs take the approach that we just have this one model, right? So I believe computer science people will figure out better ways to run AI more efficiently using, it started with, neural nets, reacting neural nets, and then we went into transformers, which were paralyzed. And right. Now we have, we did basically the same thing. We traded off slightly different with space constraints, and we moved to Mamba. And there's some new models like Jamba that have come out, which are even faster in some areas, but using a much lower energy footprint. And I think the research will continue till they really it is like the mainframe days of computers, right? So ultimately, it's going to come down to that phone with a neural chip, which will have most of the AI on the chip. It is eventually going to happen and then you have your personalized AI to help do that. And when it comes to businesses, I think in the next 5-10 years horizon, it's hard to predict that far out, but at least in the next few years, there's going to be a lot of innovation, whether it's in life sciences, material sciences. There's a lot of challenging problems that were hard to solve, right? What are the right molecule combinations to build something? What is the, so there's going to be innovation because of AI, then just future of work, how we do work. I mean, do we really want to sit and do some of the things that we do today at the desk? They're not the most entertaining, you know, replying to emails, cleaning your email out of all these non-solicited. So there's a lot of non-work that happens. Could we enable the age of 4 days work? We can really enjoy 3 days with the family. I mean, that's a big question. We were never designed to sit in the office 5 days a week, 10 hours a day.
Right.
So there's a lot of those things.
That's a great point, because it's another topic that came up with, again, you know, I jokingly say a lot that, no one ever talks about the positive aspects of the pandemic. But the reality is that a couple things that came out of the pandemic were, one, for a lot of organizations that didn't think that they could ever do hybrid or fully remote, they're like, hey, we could actually do this. Two, that the idea of that burnout, and we're not just continually demanding of our employees, that there's a cost, a human cost to that, that the, so the whole employee experience, you know, the EXP or XP, depending on the vendor selling you a product. But that space of looking at truly not just paying lip service to work-life balance, but, you know, what are we actually doing to our people? And the idea that is taken root is that happier, healthier employees are long-term more productive, more innovative, and provide more value to a company. And so that's that balance. We want people to be productive, but we want them to be happy. So I love the idea of the one company I worked for in the mid early 90s, EDS, if you remember that.
Yes,
Ross Perot's own company. Yeah, so EDS. And we had a 4-day work week. I had Wednesdays off. It was awesome. Going to a movie at 11 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, there's nobody in there. It's fantastic. Do all your shopping. Get all your services and your stuff done.
Yeah. So there are positives to this. And I think, and we will, as long as we think about humanity as a whole first, right? There's going to be the human nature of greed and other aspects that will want to harness this for the maximum outcome, whether it's for some venture capital investment looking for 100x return versus if there's a balance towards how we cater to humanity and nature. I mean, we need to take care of our planet. And this is probably, while we all believe that there's a multi-planetary systems out there, but they're light years away and we have no way to get there yet. And so we have to take care of this. I know we can go to Mars, but it's not very appetizing. I love the lakes around my house. They're beautiful. So I think AI can help a lot of those things, right? Imagine adding efficiencies to some of the polluting manufacturing companies to be more energy efficient. Coming up with better materials for, whether it's improved. Solar has gone up so much that, they're starting to outperform coal and traditional energy sources significantly. And then if we can make that even better by a factor of 2 or 3, we are there. Maybe it can help solve some of the most challenging problems of fusion around the materials. If it can help with the right task models. I'm not saying it's a panacea, it's not a silver bullet. It needs to be trained and it needs to understand all that. But on some of the larger scale problems, and some of the smaller problems, right? We shouldn't be paralyzed by the fact that it can solve some grand problems. Start small, you know. Can it run my home efficiently? Can it run my business efficiently? Can I make my employees' life better to they have a better quality of life? Maybe we go to a 7-hour work week and instead of 8, maybe people can go home at 4 or 3:30 when their kids are out of school. Yeah. There's a lot of things that can be good. Time will tell how it gets utilized and how we as humanity let it grow as another innovation. It's a two-sided sword. So,
yeah.
But there's a lot of, I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, there is always the tendency to abuse technology, but overall, we all were worried about the internet, but I think it came out to help everybody. And you and I are having this conversation that 15 years ago would not have been possible. But it has its negative sides, like overuse of social media, addiction to the dopamine kicks that you get right. watching YouTube yep. shorts. Those kind of things are also there. So we just need to find the right balance.
That's great. I think at a certain age, like you know, getting into middle age, it's good thing about middle age is I stopped caring about a lot of that stuff. So it's like,
yes.
You know, the dopamine rush is like, doesn't have the impact it did yeah. you know, 10, 15 years ago. But I am, so going back, you know, kind of different form of the question, I mean, given your focus and what Taza focuses on, what you're working with clients are there obvious areas, like you talked about going piloting and experimenting, where any suggestions on where an enterprise should go and look at first? Like, because one thing we talked about right at the beginning, I think there's some obvious benefits as a marketing guy, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of the most obvious solutions to experiment are around improving around marketing activities. What other areas are you working with companies on, or where do you suggest that they might start looking at how they can automate with AI?
Right. I think anywhere there is drudgery and work can be pushed to automation, right? So whether it's implementing SOPs, we all love processes, but following them and keeping statuses update, approval update, summarizing meetings, taking, I mean, for example, there's so many smaller use cases you can start with, right? So we've heavily leaned on AI for our product discussion meetings. We have, we use a tool that summarizes all of it. Then our product people then take some of those notes and convert them into proper user stories, organize that information better. They make sure they don't miss anything from the meeting. Earlier, we had somebody taking key notes. I'm like, as you take key notes, you're not paying attention to what's being
right.
said. So you're,
yep.
that's a very small use case. And there's a product out there and good kudos to them for doing that job. And those are some of the areas that you can really start with. I think the simple way is to when you're working on your business or you're thinking about problems within your business department or business unit, is to just sit back for an hour with a cup of coffee and think of what is meaningful work and what is not, and what can be, what would make my team better and happier, right? I always say, I love to keep my team happy because happy coders produce better products any day than an unhappy coder. Yeah. So can we keep our team enthused, happy, and give them the kind of, and you get the productivity gain as a business. You're not self-help. Businesses are there to drive some outcomes and have profitability and generate revenue for themselves and for their stakeholders and for all those things are true, but can that be done without being the drudgery of a mundane work and focus the teams and the people who build those things to better outcomes, whether that is more higher level thinking or simpler workflows. What does the future of work look like in 3 to 4 years? And when you reflect on that and then do not get paralyzed in analysis paralysis, but start small, right?
Right.
Okay. Yes, this is a grand idea, but let me start with that recording of the meeting, which is unnecessary for somebody to, I don't need somebody to take notes and not pay attention to the meeting, or somebody to do X within product ideation. There are simple steps that can be taken to make life a lot easier. Eventually, we'll get to agent-driven programs and things like that that will help personal productivity at work and home. But you can really start very, very small. There are a lot of resources available online. I mean, either YouTube is flooded with good tutorials. There are a lot of intelligent people. They can start with simple YouTube videos that a lot of intelligent people talk about, not from an academic standpoint. They can focus on the application areas and how people are using it just to expand their horizon. There's so many articles being published on various
Well, topics. I always comment that it's all these Instagram videos where you've got all these air quote influencers that talk about like, hey, here's five AI tools that you need to know. And they'll like different. And I'll watch some of those and I'll go check out the various tools. And maybe in the grouping that they intended with their scenario or might, you know, again, because I'm experimenting with these different things and trialing them, I might find one here and there and work them into my way of thinking. But I think it goes back to, if you're not experimenting, like you're not going to know which questions to ask that could lead to the future innovation. I'm not using these little tools today thinking, hey, this is it. This is the end all be all of how automate. It's more that I'm just trying to understand, keep up with in my area, my focus, you know, what is out there, what capabilities are there, because it's going to be 2-3 generations of those tools later where it may finally click. But again, I want to be able to take advantage of it instantly.
I think the, when I think I was talking to somebody else, and there's that amazing book on growth mindset, right? I think people need to take fair away out of the equation and the noise, and then just go experiment for themselves. And that's what would exactly spark that. So having that growth mindset is very important for us to, as humanity, to thrive with, you know, with this enablement, right? I call this AI enablement for now. Time will tell whether we are in the matrix or not, but for now, at least it's there. I think there's a lot of positives. If we are cautiously optimistic, you know, there, it can be abused badly. It just, you know, if you use it unethically, whether it is fake voice synthesis or, you know, all the scams that can just social engineering scams, it can amplify tremendously. And it's almost, I tell everybody, hey, have a key safe secret word with your louder trusted ones, because somebody can synthesize my voice and call you and say something that's not true. So, and if you see some outlandish request, I'm calling you, my leg is broken, wire me $20,000. First ask me for my safe word.
That's a great point. I've actually talked about with my kids, with my wife, like, and I just keep saying this again, this is the, you know, the security, you know, owner of me, the program owner is like, never click on a link in an email, never click on a link in a text, like never. If you get a warning, if you get a message, go and verify. Like I'll look at if a message came in, I wouldn't take that from my wife. I would call my wife and say, did you send that message? Is that actually you? I mean, you have to be cautious, you know, these days. You know, thankfully, again, maybe call it middle age, where I never answer my phone. I don't respond to texts.
I do for clients. Unfortunately, I was distracted for a second talking to you. Yeah. I apologize, but phone, picking up the phone usually takes the last precedent. You know, it's the last thing you do.
Nope, it's within reason around that, for the same reasons. You know, clients call or whatever. You know, look at that, but I think we do need to be more cautious and. We have to be open to experimenting with the various things and just continually learning. I mean, that's healthy for our brains anyway, to continually be learning. Now, one of the things that I do as well is, you always have, as much of a technologist and a marketer that I am, I always have something that I'm reading, that I'm doing, that has absolutely nothing to do with business, whatever. Like, the mind needs a break from that. I'm a science fiction fantasy. I'm a Lord of the Rings guy. Like, that's my break. And I will often break away from that. And with everything that I'm going on, thinking about that I'm doing, and go do that, something different, be reading. And then suddenly have like that aha moment of, oh, I need to go do that. And because I free up my brain to be able to go and process that stuff in the background. I don't pretend to know how it all works, but it works.
I know. And I'm again, I'm not the computer science engineer who's writing the activation function or the convergence or figuring out how to increase the context window, but understand the broader principles and deep enough to be able to apply it for various use cases, right? Yeah. So hopefully, I still think cautious optimism, start incrementally small. And then if you don't have an R&D team, people like us are always there to help.
Yep. Well, that's a great way. And I appreciate that. I really enjoyed having this conversation. Certainly thought provoking, and hopefully, people get get something out of that. But I always like to end this. I mean, obviously your company provides these services, can help. So how do people reach out? Where do they find you? Where are you most active in social to reach out to you?
Right. Obviously, the website is a great place to start. It's taza.com, TAAZA.com. Yeah. We are on LinkedIn as well. You can just look up by the same name, TAAZA, as you said, Taza.
And
it means like fresh and a lot of energy in there. So that's the you can reach out on both places, and we get back to people very quickly. So, and then see how we can help them if there's a fit. So,
well, awesome. Well, yes, sir. Really appreciate you for being a guest here on the Cloud Talk podcast, and hope to stay connected, and let's talk soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this. It's amazing.
You've been listening to the Collab Talk podcast. New episodes are published weekly, and you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and most other podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.